there are two episodes that, which are told towards the end of the book of Bamidbar that deal with land, with inheritance. And by the way, you could debate me and say, no, there's actually more than two, but there's two that I want to focus on. And at first glance, they may not necessarily have all that much to do with one another, but perhaps that's really the question, if these things are interrelated or not. The whole book of Bamidbar actually comes to an end not on a very exciting place. It's a just a mentioning or tying some strings together of something that had been mentioned earlier, and that's something from last week about the Benot Slavchad. Vayikruvu Roshei Ha'avot LeMishpachat B'nei Gilad, Ben Mechir, Ben Menashe, Mimishpachot B'nei Yosef. So this is the larger family of Gilad ben Machir for ben Menashe, from the Yosef family. V'dibu l'vnei Moshe v'nei Yisim, Roshei Avot l'vnei Yisrael, v'yomru et Adoni tziva Hashem l'tet et ha'aretz b'nachala b'goral l'vnei Yisrael. So on a general level, the way the land is being divided is in terms of the nachalot, in terms of being done by a goral, by lots. V'adonit tziva b'Hashem l'tet et nachalat slavchad achinu livnotav. And when it comes to the inheritance of Tzlavchad, so that was commanded to give to his daughter. So we'll just pause here for a second to understand the concern. Even though the feminists have co-opted the daughters of Tzlavchad, I'm not sure to what extent we're dealing with feminism or we're dealing with capitalism. Just as a straight-up question, are we dealing with a real concern for women's rights? Are we really concerned over here but somebody who wants to inherit their... it's actually interesting because within the claim that they initially make, if you look in Source 2, Pasuk Dalet, Lama yigrash shem avinu mitoch mishpachto? Right? Why should our father's name be diminished within his greater family? Which actually sounds like they're, again, this can just be a claim. You know, you can always make all kinds of claims. It sounds to be that they're not saying that what they're really concerned about is their own name and their own inheritance and their own issues, and what they're a little bit more concerned about is the name of their father being remembered and so on. I mean, I picked on somebody last Shabbos who kept her maiden name when she got married. So I asked, why are you keeping your father's name? Why aren't you keeping your mother's name? Meaning, why is an act of feminism to keep your father's name? An act of feminism should be to keep your mother's name, which is an unfair thing on my part, which is fine. I know. I like to be unfair. Because that was the name that she brought up with. But, you know, it's like saying, but that itself is paternalistic, which means... And by the way, I will say parenthetically that there are many cases of rabbis who took their mother's name and have the mother's side of the family. There are many, many examples of this along the way. If I were more interesting, I would tell you about them. But, yes?
Well, I have to respond, of course.
No, you don't. You don't. Good. So my point again is that, I'll say it again, feminists have co-opted this, and it could be because there's just so little material, so you grab onto whatever you can and you turn this into a feminist narrative. I'm fine with all this, doesn't concern me. It amuses me, as you see, but what I'm far more concerned with is what exactly are the interests of the daughters of Tzlavchad going into it. And the concern over here seems to be, if we go where we started in the first source, in Perek Lamed Vav, that, okay, Tzlavchad is no longer here. His daughters are here. His daughters were given special divine instructions that they will inherit. Why? And now we have to say very quietly, because there are no sons to inherit. And what's the problem? The father, this line of the family is going to be wiped out because there are no sons. So therefore, keep the father's name alive, exactly as you said, keep the father's name alive. Now, all this is very good, except that these five young ladies happen to be single. Although, I can't say that once they inherit some land, it could be the chances of getting married will increase dramatically, right? And now what's going to happen when they get married? And when they get married, will now the land which they inherited to keep their father's name alive now go over to their children, but will now go over to this other side of the family, which means to following the paternal side of whoever it is that they're going to marry, which means what we have over here is, yeah, so Tlofchad's name is going to be kept alive for one generation. And then as soon as his daughters get married, that's going to be lost. So that's really what the whole concern over here is. And again, is the whole concern here one of ideology? Is it one of capitalism? Is it one that, hold it, you know, there's an, you know, where there's a will, then there are relatives. I'm okay, it's good to broaden. It's good. I'm sorry that we're going this direction in your mother's memory, but no, it's actually very good because it deals with inheritance and deals with but it's interesting because over here, so over here we have this whole concern taking place, but, and I'll say it again, we're not exactly sure with what to do with all of this, what really is the concern. So they're just pointing out that you've solved the problem on a micro level. Slavka's name will be kept alive, and now everyone's going to know that Slavka's got some daughters with land which they can inherit. And as I said, this will help them get married. There's this whole discussion how old they were. And the solution is over here at the end that they're going to marry their own relatives in Pasuk Yud Aleph in source number one. Vatiyena machlatir tzachag lav milka v'not slavchad lav not odeim l'nashim. They ended up marrying their cousins mi mishpachot b'nei Menashe ben Yosef ayud l'nashim. Vatihi nachlatan amateh mishpachat aviyen. And therefore, at the end of the day, the land remained within this larger, let's call it, this larger Yosef or larger Menashe family, and that is this ending of the book. Eila haMitzvot vaMishpatim asher tzivah Hashem biyad Moshe b'nei Yisrael b'Rot Moav al Yudeinu Rechol. Okay, now we just now ended the book, which again, of course, is an interesting end, but it just seems to be a little anticlimactic to other issues that have taken place over here. Let's just make sure that we dealt with this inheritance issue. Yes. Well, that's how this has now worked out at the end of the day. Yes, you have land, but now we have this larger concern, what's going to happen with this land? Right, so at the end, this is what happened. At the end, they... So that's a very good question. That's a very good question. Well, yeah, right. So, yeah. Okay, that's what I want to get to. That's the second complication over here, which I want to work through as well. And by the way, I'll ask the question already right now. When Benot Slavchad took the land, where did they take the land? Did they take the land? I know they get the reputation of being Zionists, but at least I'm throwing out the question now. Did they take their land inside the land of Israel? Take the land outside the land of Israel? And how do you know? So I read it somewhere, which means somebody. Of course they did, because that's the whole point. So let's go see if we actually... I'm not mocking you. I'm mocking whoever taught you. Okay. No, I'm not mocking you. I'm saying let's wait and let's see. But I'm raising the question right now. So let's take a look at source number two. Vatikravna benot Slavchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. Okay. So we have real specific, you know, family line over here. Slavchad is the son of Chefer, who's the son of Gilad, who's the son of Machir, son of Menashe. Even though sometimes you have to be careful that even though it gives you a line, sometimes they do tend to skip a little bit and only to tell you the people that you know of, people that that we're familiar with. As far as I can tell, and I'm not saying this with 100% certainty, but as far as I can tell, quickly looking, Menashe had a son, one son, Machir, and Machir had one son named Gilad. And Gilad then had a whole bunch of children. So, excuse me? Why? Ah, interesting. Hold on. Interesting, but it's not going to be a double portion because there's no other children. When there's no other children, they get not a double portion. They get 100% of the portion. So it's right. So, unless there were, well, okay, let's leave that. But that's an interesting point. So we have Tzlofchid ben Chir ben Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe, Limishbechot Menashe ben Yosef. So right away you all notice that there's too many words over here, because it already said ben Menashe. It didn't have to say Limenashe, right, ben Yosef. The Elishmot benotav Machla, when my father's been in the hospital for the last week, and his name is Pinchas ben Bela Machla. So I wrote it to a couple of people. I kept seeing people fixed it immediately from Machla to Malka to all kinds of things. But it's actually one of the Benot Slavchad was her middle name, Machla, which actually sounds like somebody who's sick. But right, dance Machla. So he spelled like that. So his name was also in last week's parsha, Pinchas. And then somebody showed that Bela was also there, so that all the, if you look really carefully. but Ezrat Hashem, he'll be getting out today. V'tamod l'fnei Moshe l'fnei Elazar Kohen l'fnei Nisim v'kol eda petach ol moed lemor. So they're actually waiting very patiently outside. They're standing outside and waiting. And they say, Avinu meit b'midbar, our father died in the desert. He was not part of the rebellion in terms of Korach, but he died in his own sin. So by saying that he's not part of Korach itself is saying that he wasn't on the other side, right? He was on the good side, but ki b'chato meit. And the question is, what does it mean, b'chato meit? He died with his sin. Uvanim lo hayu lo, and he had no sons. Lama yigrash shem avinu mitoch mishpachto. Why should his name be diminished in front of him? He ain't lo ben, because he doesn't have a son. Tnu lanu achuzah b'tochachei avinu. Give us inheritance among the larger family of our father. Moshe goes and turns to God. Ve'yikrev Moshe mishpan lefnei Hashem. God gives the answer, and the answer is that they can indeed inherit. Rashi in source 3, the mishpachat Menashe ben Yosef. So we saw that there it was stressed over there. By the way, if you look back in source 1 in Pasuk Yud Bet, Mimishbachot b'nei b'nasha ben Yosef. So again, it's stressed, this ben Yosef is stressed a number of times. Loma ne'amar v'lo kvar ne'amar ben Menashe. Why does it have to tell us ben Menashe ben Yosef a second time? It's already said that he's the son of Menashe. We know who Menashe is. Elolomer l'cha Yosef chivev et ha'aretz. Yosef was a Zionist. Yosef loved the land. Shene'amar, as Yosef says, v'alitim et atzmotai Mizeh. That Yosef says, does he say Mizeh? Valitim atzmotzai, take my remains out when you leave. So the truth is that there's actually a moral issue over here. That's the way the Midrash frames it, is that Yosef was kidnapped, Yosef was taken by force outside the land of Israel, and Yosef says, please return me to the land of Israel. So Yosef was kidnapped in the greater Shechem area, and Yosef then is buried in the greater Shechem area because this is a moral issue. You did damage, now return me. But we find Yosef's particular interest in this. There's a number of Midrashim which contrast Yosef and Moshe as far as why it is that Yosef deserves to be buried, and it's actually a little strange and perhaps even arbitrary, but the Midrash points out that when Yosef was identified in Egypt over the years, he was always called a Nar Ivri. He was always an Ivri. Everybody knew him as being an Ivri. But when Moshe goes and he meets the daughters of Yitro, then he's described as an Ish Mitzri. Now, the truth is this is a little unfair, because Yosef was raised and then kidnapped to the land of Israel, and he was this stranger there, and this Ivri, and Moshe was raised in the land of Egypt, and you know, so he didn't protest, but the Midrash says is that it's a chilul Hashem. At least that's the way Roy Salvechik understood the Midrash. That it's a chilul, desecration of God's name, that he didn't stand up and say, I am a Jew, and let it be understood that he wasn't a Jew, and because of that, he did not have the right to be buried back in the land of Israel. And that's the way the Midrash goes. Yosef is identified as a Nar Ivri, is able to be buried in Israel. Moshe is identified as a Mitzri, is unable to be buried in Israel. And as I said, it is very, very harsh, but Yosef's, quote-unquote, Zionism is here. So, of course, Yosef is the first Zionist who raises his children outside of the land of Israel, and therefore they're the ones who have this, they're the ones who still cry on Yom HaTzmod and so on, and just when they sing HaTikva and so on and so forth, while, you know, the ones that were actually born there, they have a little less of a connection. So Yosef's children, and you know, we pointed out a couple of months ago, regarding the Ma'apilim, the suggestion that most likely the Ma'apilim, those who in Parshat Shlach, after there was this terrible sin of the spies, and then it was decided they can't go to the land of Israel, and then some people said, no, we are going, and we don't care, we're going ahead, and those were most likely all from the tribe of Ephraim, who also come from Yosef, who, again, these are our Zionists. Menashe and Ephraim, born in Egypt, are our Zionists. So Rashi over here is saying it. Why are we bringing it back to Yosef? Lama ne'emar, look for ne'emar ben Menashe. Loma lecha Yosef chivev et ha'aretz shenema relitim atzmotai. Uvnotav chivivu et ha'aretz. And his daughters loved the land as well. So therefore, as far as Rashi is telling us right now, Rashi seems to know, and I'll ask the same question again, how does he know? Rashi seems to know is that what they're asking for is specifically in the land of Israel. Now I want to pause again. This is in Perek Kaf Zayin, takes place prior to B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad making their requests. It's prior. So that's in Perek Lamed Bet. This is in Perek Kaf Zayin. This is prior. They're saying, we want our inheritance. I'm going to ask the question again. Over here, Rashi, no, they want it in the land of Israel, so do they end up getting it in the land of Israel? Or at some point, for whatever reason, which we still have to get to, Menashe ends up, at least part of them, outside of the land of Israel, so where does the Benot Slavchad end up? But Rashi over here is framing it absolutely as they love the land. There are other sources, the Midrash right over here on Perek of Zion, actually goes further and says the women generally were Zionist. All the sources that you've heard about, that the women didn't sin with the Meraglim, and they didn't sin with the Egel, they all come from over here. This is the starting point, because the text itself is debatable regarding whether the women were included in mourning in terms of, oh no, are they going to bring us to the land of Israel, which is this terrible place, were the women involved or not? In terms of the golden calf, it's also debatable. And whether the women were involved in well. But over here, Benot Slavchad, who stand up and says, again, the Midrash, more than it turns them into feminists, at least in this particular version, turns them into Zionists, and saying, you know, they're ideologically driven, and they want the land of Israel. We want the land of Israel, but who does it credit that this comes from? This is a manifestation of being a descendant of Yosef, and therefore they have this particular affinity to the land. So that's what Rashi... That's what Rashi is pointing out over here. Okay. We'll see. We're not there yet. You're getting ahead of me. He source number four, but I got now I got you all thinking about that, which is the point. Source number four. Rashi continues and he says, he was not involved in the sin of Korach, but he died in his own sin. Which sin was it? So look at the bottom two lines here. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Mekoshesh Eitzim Haya. He was the Mekoshesh. Now why claim that Tzalavchad was the Mekoshesh? One of the other Tanayim gets very upset with Rabbi Akiva. He says, the Torah concealed it, how dare you reveal it? If he really was the Mekoshesh. But Rabbi Akiva most likely is going on which words? Ki bichet'o mate. He died in his own particular sin. There is an approach which is also found in the Midrash, which is an elusive Midrash, which is quoted by Tosfot, that the Mekoshesh, and if you think about the word, it doesn't say Koshash, it doesn't say in past tense, that he gathered wood. He wouldn't stop. Mekoshesh, he keeps on gathering wood. They come over and say it's Shabbos, or more likely they throw rocks at him and say Shabbos, and but he keeps on doing it. So according to Midrash, there was a general feeling going around the community that it doesn't make a difference what we do anymore. We all have a death sentence on us. We're all going to die over the next 40 years in the desert. It just doesn't make a difference what you do anymore. And he comes out and says, what do you mean it doesn't make a difference what you do? If you break Shabbos, you're still going to get killed. So he goes and he breaks to prove the point. I mean, we have Jews like this. To prove the point, he goes and says, I'm going to break it. And they say, stop. He goes, no, I'm going to break Shabbos to show you that it still makes a difference. The problem with this is, according to at least Rabbi Shimon, it's a davar she... Or even better, it's davar she'enitzricha lagufa. It's a malacha shen shiur tilgufa. It's a malacha that you're doing for a different reason. To be guilty for Shabbos, you have to do something with the proper intention. He's doing it not with the intention. He's not doing it because he wants the wood. He's doing it for another intention, so he should be potter. So I'll leave that for any Talmudic scholars who want to torture themselves to figure out if that's the case, according to the Midrash, why in the world he should have been guilty, unless you'll say that it's some kind of a horat shah, a one-time decision. So getting back to Rabbi Akiva says he is the Mekoshesh. What's strong about Rabbi Akiva's approach, ki bicheto, he died of his own individual sin, so you go looking through the whole desert. How many individual sins do you have? So you actually have two that I can count of right now. One is this. What's the other one? The blasphemer. The blasphemer, but the blasphemer, we're told his mother was from the tribe of Dan, and the father was an Ish Mitzri, so that's obviously not somebody coming from the family of Yosef, so that can't be him. The only other, so the Rabbi Akiva is doing good, basic, it's process of elimination. Let's look through all the sins. The only one that this could be is Slavchad, so therefore he's Slavchad, process of elimination. On the other hand, we find a second interpretation, which is a little bit weaker in terms of the text, but Rashi likes it anyway. And Rashi brings the second approach, Rabbi Shimon Omer, and the bottom line in Rashi, in source 4, almost the bottom line, Rabbi Shimon Omer min ha-ma'apilim haya, that he was one of the ma'apilim. So what does it mean he's one of the ma'apilim? So this is consistent. The ma'apilim, the ones who after they're told they can't go to Israel, no, we're going to Israel anyway, so now we've gone back to our Zionists. So therefore, the sin itself. Now again, why does Rashi like that? Because thematically it works a little bit better into the Benot Slavchad, one in the land of Israel. Their father wanted the land of Israel, but he messed up. He went before the time, even though, as I did point out, that most likely most of the Mapilim or all the Mapilim were from Ephraim. To say that the people from Ephraim grab someone from Manasseh, come, let's go. The weakness of this, of course, in Bichet'o, in his own individual sin. So that's why Rabbi Shimon's opinion is a little bit weaker, but as I said, thematically, it's a little bit stronger. Rabbi Akiva, by saying it's Mekoshesh, as I said, it's good process of elimination, good detective work, Sherlock would have been happy. Okay, but the question, of course, is when the wood gather. That's part of it. Okay, so let's now go to our B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad, source number 5, our separate story. Here's our separate story, our anti-Zionist story. Umenekne Rav, again, page 2, source 5, Perek Lamed Bet Pasuk Aleph. Umekne Rav Hayel Vnei Reuven Vnei Gad Atzum Maod. They had a great deal of personal wealth, great flocks. Vayuritz Eretz Yaazer Veet Eretz Gilad Vnei Makom Mikne. They see this land, this area over here, and they see it's a good place for grazing. Vayavu Vnei Gad Vnei Reuven. It starts B'nai Reuven, B'nai Gad, and now it flips to B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven. Vayomru Moshe ve'el Elazar, Kohen ve'lo Nisei Aida Le'mor, Atarot ve'divon ve'yazer ve'nimra ve'cheshbon ve'ala'a usva'am unavu uva'an ha'aretz sheika Hashem lefnei Adat Yisrael eretz miknehi ula'avdecha mikneh. All of these places which have been captured, these are places for grazing, and your servants have flock. Vayomu matzanu chen be'enecha, yutan et ha'aretz hazot la'avadach la'achuza, al tavirenu et ha'yarden. If it pleases you, give us this land and have us not cross the Yarden. Now, before I say anything else, to say this to Moshe, if you really think about it, is unbelievably cruel. I mean, Moshe himself wants nothing more than to be crossing over. I mean, he had his tick aliyah rejected by Nefesh B'Nefesh. Couldn't prove his Judaism. They said, no, you were raised in the palace. Where's your mom's ketuvah, right? No, they got divorced and remarried. Yeah, right, okay. So Moshe's had his tik aliyah rejected, and you know he's sitting there, you know, wants nothing more than go to the land of Israel, let a whole bunch of people come in. By the way, can we stay over here? Like, I'm just saying, on this personal level, this is just so unbelievably tragic. You know, it's like try to find the perfect thing to say to somebody, which is the wrong thing to say to them. I mean, I know someone, I won't say any names, but my wife will laugh or be upset with me, one or the other, that somebody was dating, these two people were dating for many, 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 many years, and then one of them got engaged. So someone we know went over to the other one, said, Mazel Tov, it wasn't to me. It's like they broke up and then just got engaged to somebody else, and it wasn't a mazel tov for them. It was more, I mean, that's it. They're going over and they're saying, you know, we'd like to stay over here. And like Moshe must be looking at them. Are you out of your minds? Like, what's the matter with you? And then on the other level, it may come in, because why does Moshe agree? I mean, why even go there? Maybe on the other level is, you know what, this is a holy land and you don't want to be there. No one's going to force you. You have to deserve to be there. You don't want to go in. But again, that's of course not Moshe's initial response. His initial response is he compares them to the spies, which is not a wonderful thing to be compared to. And we've explored that before, so let's you compare him to Lot. We've done that before as well. So let's leave that and try to focus more upon our issues at hand, namely the issues of the inheritance. One thing which is interesting, which you may not have noticed, is one of the places which is described in the very first line was Eretz Gilad. So one of the challenges that we have in this is actually familiarizing ourselves with the map, and the other problem is trying to figure out which map to familiarize ourselves to, because I looked and I found dozens of different maps trying to see which land we're talking about. I did give you a map in the end, but hold on to the map for now. But the interesting thing about Gilad, of course, is what? The interesting thing about Gilad, of course, is what? The interesting thing about Gilad is that it comes from the name we found in the line of Menashe, right? Menashe Mechir Gilad. So what's Gilad doing over here? Now, of course, and maybe this is not an of course statement, but, and of course, as far as I'm concerned, there are times that places will be described based upon their future name as we are going to be familiar with it. It doesn't have to tell you the original name, because the original name is going to be meaningless to us. So therefore, it calls it Gilad, even though it's not Gilad yet, but maybe it will become Gilad. As I said, to me, that's a very simple point. It actually helps explain various sections in the Torah. But what's interesting is, along the list over here, is this place, Eretz Gilad. So that may actually be a little foreshadowing in terms of why it's called Eretz Gilad. As we they make reference to all these places. Source number 6 is when it actually the deal gets done. Ki lachu matei b'nei Reuveni levet avotam u'matei b'nei Hagadi levet avotam v'chatzi matei Menashe. Now, one thing which is interesting, it's b'nei Reuveni b'nei Hagadi v'chatzi matei Menashe. Of course, it could have been. So there's 2 points here. The more obvious point is, hold it, how did Menashe get dragged into this? And we'll see more about that in a moment. The other thing which is interesting is that it's called B'nei Reuveni, B'nei Gadi, and the word B'nei is actually missing over here from Menashe. It could have been V'chatzi Mateh B'nei Menashe. Just to make it more even, Shnei Matot V'chatzi Mateh Lachu Nachalatam, they took their inheritance. Now, going back to the middle of this dialogue, after they were accused of being spies and accused of abandoning their brothers, and really accused of doing terrible, what they're really accused of is, you want to stay out of the land. Moshe's point is, okay, you don't want to move to Israel, but by doing this, you are going to be deflating the people who do want to go in, and what right do you have to do this? As much as people love to use that line, your brothers will go to war and you're going to stand here, they love to use it against the Haredim, it's much more apt to people who are sitting in Beverly Hills. Apologies to those in Beverly Hills who I love dearly. But it's much more to those who've chosen a different lifestyle and saying, well, it's really dangerous in Israel. How can you go there? I mean, it's... So those who weaken those who live in Israel is really what Moshe is saying. That's the part of the spies that he brings in as the analogy. You're weakening the people that are there. Okay, you don't want to go in is one thing. Just be quiet. You know, we're in a way. I don't know what to say. Moshe is saying that you've done something which is, which is horrific. So now, the deal which ends up being brokered is a deal that they know. We will go to battle. We're not afraid. So therefore, if you want to live in, you can pick now the name of the place. You want to live in Englewood. You want to live in the Five Towns, it's great, but send your kids to the army, and then you have the right to sit there, because if you don't, then you have no right to to be part of the Jewish people and not to be involved, at least on some level. So they say, yeah, you want to stay here? It's great. We will go. We will not only be in the army, we're going to be in combat units. And not only being in combat units, we're going to be leading the way. And after we go and we conquer what we need to conquer, so then we're going to go back and live in our lush land outside of, let's put it this way, the other side of the Yarden. But Yom B'nei Gad V'nei Ruvain, again, B'nei Gad seems to be the main speakers over here. El Moshe Lemor, Avodechi Asuk Asher Adoni Mitzaveh, Tapenu Nashenu Mekneinu V'chobetinu Yusham V'arei HaGilad. Again, by the way, notice that Gilad gets singled out. V'avodecha Yavu Kol Chalut Tzava L'fnei Hashem L'milchama Kasher Adoni Dover. We'll go out, we'll be leaders, we'll go out to war. V'yitzav L'Moshe L'Azar Kohen V'al Yeshua B'nun V'toshe Avot HaMatot L'vnei Yisrael V'yom Moshe Aleihem Im Yavu B'nei Gad V'nei Ruven. Meaning, if they do this and they set up the whole conditions, they make sure that they clarify this really, really well. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayanu B'nei Gad V'nei Ruven Limar, Et Asher Dibar Hashem L'Avadecha, Kein Na'aseh. Deal is on, we will do what you say, we accept this 100%. Nachnu Navor Chalutzim L'Fnei Hashem. By the way, notice the L'Fnei Hashem over here, which is really quite interesting. Eretz Kanan V'Tenu Chazon Achleinu Me'Ever L'Yardin. The L'Fnei Hashem, if you noticed, actually comes up a number of times in this, which actually may be a subtext, which maybe we'll talk about on Shabbat, which you won't be there, more likely than not. But if you look in Pasuk Kav Zayin, it's there. L'Fnei Hashem, it's there again in... I'm not skipping. It's there in Pasuk Lamed Bet. I think it's there at least another time or two. Oh, yeah, it's also there in Kav Tet. L'fnei Hashem, L'fnei Hashem, L'fnei Hashem. Part of going to the land is being in front of God, which also leads you to suspicions why they don't want to be in Israel. Maybe it's a little too holy in Israel, and it's better to live someplace that God's not watching. But okay, as it were. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'yitain lahem Moshe l'vnei Gad v'nei Ruvain u'lechatzi shevet Menashe ben Yosef. No, stop there in the middle of the pasuk. This is the first time that Menashe gets dragged into this. Menashe, till this point, had nothing to do with this. B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven were doing all the negotiating, and at the very end of the day, maybe, at the very end of the day, again, it's B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, and again, it's described as Ulechatzi, Shevet Menashe, Ben Yosef, they are thrown in as well. Melechet Sichon, Melech Amariv, Melechet Og, Melech Abashan, Aretz Lareb, Gvot, Arei Aretz Aviv. V'yavnu B'nai Gad, by the way, they said we'll stay by Gilad. I keep wanting you to focus on Gilad. So what happens at the end? B'nei Gad get divon ve'atarot ve'et orer ve'et atarot ve'shofan yazer ve'yigba. Ve'et b'nei Nimra ve'et b'nei Haran arei nevo ve'et bal ma'on musubat shem ve'et sivma v'ikru b'shemot et shem ha'erim asher banu. So again, they call them the names. So all the names that are being given are the names that they are calling them. V'yachu b'nei Machir. Right? Sorry, did I skip it all? Uvnei Ruvain et Cheshbon Bet Alav et Kiryat Yam ve'et Nevoot Bal Ma'on Musubat Shem ve'et Sivma V'kru B'Shemot Shem Shemot Arim Asher Banu. Okay, that I'd skipped. Pasuk Lamed Tet Vayelchu B'nei Machir Ben Menashe Gilada. So over here we have Gilad coming into it. Vayil Keduha, which is also very interesting. What does it mean? They capture it. Vayoresh et Amori Asher Ba. And they take away the inheritance from the Emori, which are there. Which is interesting, because B'nai Reuven, B'nai Gad, the way that it sounded, that they were describing it, okay, we're already sitting here. Now, if you go back to some of the intrigue that had taken place in Sefer Bamidbar till this point, there were some skirmishes, there were some wars, there was capturing some land, and basically B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad are looking and saying, well, this is really nice land, we already captured it, really goes as a shame to just let it go, let's stay here. We can build a nice homestead, or right, what we call it, the Ponderosa, right? We can build over here. But again, we have a difference when we get to the B'nai Menashe, right? I hope you notice it. There's a qualitative difference over here, and that is Ve'yilchu B'nai Machir Ben Menashe Gilada Ve'yil Keduha. They go and they capture something which we didn't have yet. V'yitain Moshe et ha-Gil'ad l'mechir b'menash v'yeshev ba. The Gil'ad, which was actually what they had wanted from the beginning, ends up going to the B'nai Menashe. And again, I'm going to point out that the name Gilad happens to be within the family line of Menashe, which at least then brings up, raises the question again, which what exactly is that interrelationship? Which, by the way, you can say it any way that you want. I mean, I don't care. You can say that he's called Gilad because they named him after the land, which is unlikely. You can say that they named the land after Gilad. You can say it's just a coincidence. Again, I'm open to any suggestion that you want. But at least I want you to notice that there is this this correlation. Just to continue a little bit, Vayitain Moshe et HaGilad. By the way, isn't that interesting? He gives it to them. They just captured it. So why does Moshe have to give it? Vayitain Moshe et HaGilad l'machir ben Menashe v'yeshev ba. V'yair ben Menashe l'machir ben Menashe v'yeshev ba. So if you want to look at the very end of source 6 there, I have the line for you. You have Yosef, Menashe, Machir, Gilad, Eezer. At the very end of page 6, I have the whole... end of page 6, we have the whole line for you to look at. Okay, so Moshe gives this to Machir ben Menashe v'yeshev ba. V'yair ben Menashe halach v'yilkod et chavoteihem. Again, we have more battles going on here. Now, Yair ben Menashe goes and fights. V'yikra etein chavot Yair. V'novach halach v'yilkod et knat v'et benoteh v'yikra novach v'shmo. So we have over here a little bit more battle, you know, fighting going on. But it's interesting that you have you have some cowboys. The cowboys coming from Menashe going out. Now, why they're involved, we don't know. How many of them are involved, we don't know yet. So let's continue. Let's continue. Good, good, good. So let's continue. Rashi says it's called Chavat Yair. Lefi shelo hayu lo banim karam bishmo lezikaron. That he didn't have any children, therefore they called the place based upon Yair. But by the way, we again Chavat Yair. That was mentioned towards the end of source number 7. So Yair didn't have children, so therefore the place gets called in his name. So it's also interesting, I don't know if you've noticed it, we've had fertility issues. I'm not going to say lack of children completely, but some cases of it. But we've had issues not having sons. We had issues of very small families going along the line over here within Menashe at various points. And it's, again, just to notice. Now, source number... Chavot Yair. That was in source 7, verse... Mem Aleph, Pasuk 41. V'yair b'Menashe lach v'yichod et chavoteim v'yikra etein chavot Yair. What they captured, that area. Yeah. Source 10, V'yeir ben Menashe, whom in Mishpachat Yehuda. The Ibn Ezra tells us, just to complicate this for all of you. So you learned something today. This is good. V'yeir ben Menashe, whom in Mishpachat Yehuda. Ki ken katuv, because it says it black and white in Divrei Hayomim. Ki chetzron lakach et bat mechir ben Menashe. So again, we have a problem of people, daughters of Menashe, not, right, daughters of Menashe marrying, okay, so let's slow down for a second, because this is now going to get way too complicated. Ki chetzron lakach bat machir ben Menashe v'olid mimen et segov v'segov v'olid et Yair shayu lo ha'arim barei ha-Gilad. And he's the one who had these places in the Gilad. So suddenly, you know, okay, we had B'nai Ruvain, B'nai Gad, right? And then somehow part of Menashe gets thrown into this. But not only does Menashe get thrown into this, Menashe's extended family, their cousins get dragged into this as well. V'nikra al shem mishpachat imo. And he took his mother's name. So as much as you want to give the credit for the Benot Slavchad taking their father's name, over here we have somebody who's known by taking their mother's name. Here we should have the real feminist should be pointed out over here, rather than those who keep their father's, the paternalistic name. Like
is the mother's name? You say not yet
either. No. He's known as being part of the Menashe family, even though on his father's side he's from Yehuda. Okay, so this here's an unacceptable person. So I'm just pointing out that over here, you know, once you talk about, okay, I'll start the sentence again. I'll try to say it in English. So much attention gets given to Benot Slavchad, how they are, you know, this feminist, and they're over here. We have very close to this whole story somebody else who is going in terms of their mother's family and connected to them, right? Because he's a man, so a man can't be a feminist, so therefore it's far less interesting. Okay. So again, v'nikra al shem mishpachat imo. And over here, he's connected to Menashe because he's connected to his mother's side and not through his... So it is of children, so nothing about him matters. Okay. But he ends up getting something named, right? Chavat Yair, which is... Okay, you can leave. Right. Yeah, but that's a different Yair. It's a different line. It's a different family. Yeah, but it has nothing to do with either of these. So that's a different family, different line, different Yair. Okay. Gam Yesh Kohanim Shinuko Shem Barzilai Giladi. Okay, and he goes, no, this is not the only place we find this. And the Ibn Ezra says, don't ask me how Yair took a Nachla from a different tribe. So what does he mean when he says, don't ask me, don't bother me. Don't bother me with any facts. Leave me alone. Ki Eretz Kanan hi hanechleket. That only in the land of Israel does it have to follow the normal rules of division based upon tribes. V'lo Eretz Emori. And not the Emeritary. Why? Because where is Eretz Emeri? Even though it's on the east side, it's the Wild West. It's the Wild West. You go, you take it, it's mine. You put your, how do you stake your land? Okay, you put your stake in the land. Shehu may aver liyarden mizracha. Because it's on the east side of the Jordan, and therefore he took it. Kiyesh Emori Beretz Kanan, because the other Emori, v'hu ayah takif mikol shivat goyim, that the Emori were the worst out of all of them. And he goes and he takes what he wants to take. He goes, don't bother me that you. So over here, what we're now noticing, well, the first thing we're noticing is that there's no chance we get through all the sources today. But the other thing that we're noticing is that we have B'nai Reuven, B'nai Gad, or B'nai Gad, or B'nai Reuven, whichever order you want. We have, what word was missing? B'nai. It's not B'nai Menashe. We have rather, we have a Menashe clan. Right? A Menashe clan is maybe a better word to use over here, which doesn't only can have them. The verse that Ibn Ezra was going on was in Divrei Yamim, which you have in front of you at 11. V'achar b'chetzron el bat machir avi gilad v'hu l'cha v'hu ben shishim shana v'teled lo et seguv v'seguv olid et Yair. So Yair, we're seeing here in Divrei Yamim, black and white, is from Mechir ben Menashe on his mother's side and not on his father's side. And this whole Chavat Yair and so on is somebody from Yehuda who is hanging out with his cousins from Menashe, who he likes. He likes to go and fight with them and go to war and to capture, and they take this land. And don't bother me, the Ibn Ezra says, about whose Nachala it is. Those rules don't work out on the east bank of the Jordan. Right. Right.
Because of that he couldn't be in there because it wasn't his father's.
Right. By the way, he says, don't bother me. Because that's talking, again, you have the camps, which is one thing, and you have the land, the Nachla, another thing. This is another issue. This is a third thing. The Chizkuni in source 13 points out, again, he's called by his mother, he says in the first line, Nikrashim ima fapisha hum yishpacha yuda, which everybody knows, now you know also. And the last line, he says, V'yikra etein chavat ya'ir lafisha ne'rag b'milchama. He was killed in battle. So he's just adding in a little narrative here. Ya'ir was killed in battle along the way, so therefore they, meaning his cousins are going out to capture this land, and you know, sometimes war doesn't work out the way that you expect it to, and this Ya'ir who goes to help his cousins, he gets killed along the way, and therefore they name it in his honor, which again also is this, you know, this terrible echo of things that, you know, happen afterwards. The Ramban in source 12, Ya'ir ben Menashe, ha'ish hazeh yetyaches el mishpachat imo. Ramban follows again, just like Ibn Ezra, but again, it's not the Ibn Ezra. It's black and white in Divrei Yom. I mean, he goes, he's really, on his mother's side, he's connected to Menashe. Bavur shelakach achuzato imayim. He went and took his lands with him. He did Divrei Yom mifurash, black and white. Shu ben Chitzron ben Peretz ben Yudah v'imo bat Machir ben Menashe. Dichtivach, and quoting the verse again, v'tam v'yitain Moshe et gilad l'machir ben Menashe l'mishpachto ki banav lachduha v'chein l'machir natati et gilad. So why does he get the gilad? Because they captured it. So it's very interesting. Reuven and Gad again ask for stuff that was already taken. So this may provide us with more information. How did Menashe get involved in all this? So Menashe wasn't involved in this. So Menashe starts saying, oh, we can... Now, how does Menashe get involved in this? Again, we don't know yet. The Torah doesn't tell us how Menashe get. There are various reasons which are put forward, but right now we're going towards this direction that Bnei Reuven, Bnei Gad, they take which was already taken, and what is what does Menashe do? Menashe says, "Okay, we're taking as well." And they just go off and they gather some guys together. They go off and they start capturing more land, and therefore now it says that Moshe gave it to them. They captured it. Just because they captured it doesn't mean it has to be theirs. But then Moshe gives them what they captured, and that would seem to be the explanation how some of Menashe got involved in all this. Of course, what's the problem? The problem is in terms of our whole Zionism, which was all beautiful, and Menashe wants to be in Israel, and so on and so forth. Let's read the end of this Ramban. Umash Amar Katuv B'Sefer Yehoshua, and by the way, that's the answer to your question, at least to my question, how do we end up knowing what happened with the whole family of Machir, or the whole family of Menashe, and which land they get? It says it in Perek Yehoshua, chapter 17 is the place to look. V'yi agoral l'matem Menashe, ki hihu b'chor Yosef. It's a very interesting turn of phrase. He's the Bechor, I didn't have to say he's the Bechor Yosef. Yosef gets a double blood, he gets Menashe and Ephraim. Who Bechor Yosef, Lemachir Bechor Menashe, Avil Gilad, Kihua Yaha Ish Milchama, Vilo Hagilad Vahabashan, Gamkin Albanav Shiyu Anshe Milchama, Kihimachu Gilad, Avil Chatua, and that's why it's called Gilad, because this whole Menashe family is captured. Ulachin Natan Lemoshe Chelek Gadol Mehem, Vulaya Yahadain Machir Kayam. And maybe Machir is still alive. The lo nigzera alav gzerat hamidbar, and he was not included in those who had to die in the desert. Lefi shelo yamifkde Moshe v'Aaron, he wasn't included in the census. Shoyelo yoter mishishim, he was more than 60 years old. Only people who were from 20 to 60 were counted. If he was older 60, then he wasn't counted. And he says maybe he was still alive. Ve'rich shanim kidarot harishonim, and he ended up living a very, very long time. The Rabban throws that out at least as a possibility. So that's what the Ramban is. That's very interesting. We never thought of that till we just saw the Ramban say this. No, is that only the people in the census had to die? So people from 20 to 60. So we all knew that anybody under 20 didn't have to, but it never occurred to us that anybody over 60 maybe gets a right to live a very, very long. Yeah. They get the right to continue on. Yeah. Okay. So two more things, and then we'll. Not young. Okay, as he says, like in the old days. Like in the old days. A couple of things. One, again, the Ramban just gave us a bit of a hint on how they got involved at all. That was the Ramban Perek Lamed Bet Mem Aleph, although he already had written Perek Lamed Bet Lamed Gimel, which he thought we knew already. So we may not. So now let's look at the Ramban here. ulchatzi shevet menashe ben Yosef. Hold it. How did they get involved in all this? Mitchila lo ba'u lefanav shevet menashe. Menashe were not involved. Aval kasher cholak ha'aretz l'shnei ha'shvatim ra'a shehi eretz gdola yoter min ha'ra'ui lahem. Who's they? Reuven and Gad. Ubikesh misha yirtza litnacheli mahen. There's lots of land over here, whoever wants to come and join, that B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, start trying, by the way, this is exactly what Moshe was talking about. Come, there's lots of land over here, come join us. There are a couple, some people from Shem and I wanted. Maybe they also had flock. And therefore they got their piece. It was really only one part of the family. Okay, I'm skipping a little bit. There are eight families in Menashe. So out of the eight families, two of the eight end up going, it's not exactly chatzi, two of the eight go, and we'll find that the other six end up going over here. So who are the two that go? Michir and Gilad. Where is Tzlavchad from? Well, it's interesting, because as far as I can tell, I'll say it again, Michir and Gilad didn't have any other, Michir had one son, Gilad. Gilad had a bunch of children. Say that it's Michir and Gilad doesn't help you much, because these are, that's the older generation, but as I said, there are these eight families, six of them end up going in. Right, let's skip a little bit. One second. What's right? V'sheish ha'mishpachot avru et ha'yarden. You need, I know that this is confusing right now. You need to look at the Pikudim on the one hand, you need to look at the verses in chapter 17 in Yoshua on the other hand. And then he goes and he quotes from Yoshua v'yilavnei menashe hanotarim l'mishpachotam l'vnei v'yez v'nei chalak v'nei Yisrael l'vnei Shechem Shechem, I think it is, l'vnei chef l'vnei shmida zui ma shekara, right, and so on. Let's skip a little bit. Umatzu ki asirit hashevet bilvad nachalu be'eretz habashan ve'eser hayadot nisha'aru v'natnu lo michelek shevet shalem asara chavalim v'ha'achad nishar. Vulai ba'avar hayut shtei ha'mishpachot ha'ela ha'michiri v'agiladi ha'mu'otot b'shevet ratzu li'parad mishvatim kidei shetihye lahem nachala rabba mehem ki yochadu b'chirbam. It could be that these were smaller. Again, at that point, there's very few people in Menashe at the earlier stage, and they have this inferiority complex, and they think they're going to get a very small amount of land in Israel. And therefore, although the tribe ends up increasing in numbers dramatically, they decide they want to go and get a big piece of land. And the Ramban says, Kach nir'eli perish hakatuv hazeh al derech hapshat, which means all of this comes down to issues of capitalism, economics, land. No ideology, no Zionism, none of this. An opposite interpretation is given by the Nitziv. He says this in Source 18 in depth a little bit. That's, I guess, contradiction terms, in depth a little bit. What he says is that Moshe sent them. They did not want to go. And Moshe sent them, just like you're going to, any place you go, you need to open a yeshiva and so on. And Moshe turns them into Roshe. The Nativ turns them into Rosh Yeshiva. Look at Source 18. Hey Mehmet, Shalchu b'nei Mechir b'nashe Gil'ad v'yachudu mikol mokom ein zeh tam liten lehem b'shvil zeh k'mo shelo natan l'shluchi Yisrael l'ragel et yazar v'lachdu b'noter mikol mokom lo nitan lehem b'not sheyazar d'l b'shlichu Yisrael naseh v'may niten ha'gil'ad l'machir v'chelag ha'rosh yishim ir li'ya'ir v'alkein haya b'zeh kavana p'nimit shenogei l'kla Yisrael sheyishvu be Ever Hayardain, Venir Ed Bishvil Sharamo Shabin and Bever Yardain, Koach HaTorah Ma'at. There's very little ideology, or in his words, Torah. Kemasha Ketuv La'el B'Shem Avot Rabbi Natan. Alkein Hishtadel Hashtil B'Kirbam Gdolei Torah She'irum Michoshchei Ha'aretz Ba'ur Korach Shelahem. That he sends them Rosh Yeshiva and so on. So it's interesting that the Netziv, who's Rosh Yeshiva, sees the reason is that you need Yeshivot. The Ramban, who was our Zionist, who moves to Israel and writes his commentary in Israel, the Ramban says, no, this is a lack of Zionism. They go there, they go see a great deal of land, and that's what brings them there. So let's just try to wrap things up. Benov Tzavchad, if you go and look and say for Yehoshua, which perhaps we should. By the way, despite this, the Ramban in source 9, sorry, the Nitziv in source 19 says that the experiment didn't last very long, and they were the first ones to be exiled, and so on and so forth. Source 21, this is Sefer Yehoshua, V'yu Goralu Matem B'Nasheh, Kihu B'chor Yosef. Now, I do want you to look, before we continue, do look at the map that you have in source 6. Maybe I did it a little small and it's hard to see. Menashe, you have East Menashe and West Menashe in this map. Do you see it? It's in the green, the East Menashe. It's really big. On the right. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Mine is green. Mine is much nicer. Okay. Sorry. So it would be on the upper right-hand side. It says Bashan, Golan, East Menashe. And then you go a little bit lower than that on the left, and you have West Menashe, which is not a small amount of land there either. Matter of fact, you put the two Menashes together, and it looks like as much land as any... It's like Texas, right? It looks like the amount of... maybe even Alaska would be a better comparison. It looks like the amount of land that everybody else has together. One suggestion that I would have is that maybe, and you started to say this before, maybe just like Yosef gets a double portion, afterwards Menashe gets a double portion. And the double portion are one on one side and one on the other side. And therefore, but again, you look at the amount of land they end up getting, it really is immense. You go through the verses in Sefer Yehoshua in black and white, you end up to the realization that there were a couple of people from Menashe, and I'll say it again, and Yehuda and some others who go to the other side and they go and they capture and so on. But the daughters of Tzlavchad, they stay in the land of Israel. So the daughters of Tzlavchad, we end up finding they absolutely want to be, in the land of Israel itself. Let's take a look a little bit in source 21. V'yigor el matem Menasheh. So we're told over there the men of battle. V'yilo Gilad v'Bashan. V'yid b'nei Menasheh notrim l'mishpach b'nei Aviez v'lechelek v'lei Yisrael. Ulevnei Shechem, Ulevnei Chefel, Ulevnei Shmida, and so on. Eil ben Menashe ben Yosef hazcharim lemishpachotam. Uled Slavchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Mechir ben Menashe lo yilo banim, kiim banot, ve'eil shmo penotav. Right? Source of Pasuk Dalet, Vatikrevena, sounds very familiar to us. Levnei Elazar, Kohen, Levnei Elazar, Kohen, Levnei Yoshua ben Nun. Levnei Nesim Leimor, Hashem Tzivat Moshe, Tet Lanu Nachala Bitoch Acheinu, Vitein Lema Pi Hashem Nachala Bitoch Achei Avihen, V'iluchav le'benasha, sara levad mi'asar gilad, v'abashan Hashem e'evel yarden, ki benot benashe nachalu nachala betoch banav, v'eretz ha'galad atal v'nei mashir hanotarim. So he gets a betoch banav in the land of Israel, yet there was part of Menashe who goes on the other side. Very, very clearly that we can now go back to Benot Tzlavchad, who were Zionists, they wanted to be in the land of Israel, but we end up with, as I said, a very interesting dynamic over here, and let's try to wrap this up as best we can. Yes, we saw the Nitziv who tries to give this ideological reasons. There's also some sources, there's an interesting discussion which starts in the Yerushalmi in Bikurim, which we skipped, which is an interesting halachic discussion. It's in source number 16, which we will not read. The question is regarding Bikurim, when you bring the first fruits and you say from the land that God gave me. So, can B'nai Gan and B'nai Reuven say this or not? And for that matter, is B'nai Menashe the same thing? And the Rishalmi wants to draw a distinction and wants to say that B'nai Gan and B'nai Reuven, God didn't give it to them, they asked for it. But B'nai Menashe, it was given to them. And it was given to them, they can bring Bikurim. So I'm saying this starts this whole interesting halachic discussion, whether, again, is this the land of Israel? Is not the land of Israel, the same status or not? With Shemitah, again, you can have all kinds of Shemitah is more of a theoretical question because it really goes back to what was captured or was considered to be Kadosh the second time around when the Jews came back by the second Commonwealth. So as I said, that's even Beit Shan is not considered to be part of Shemitah according to Rebbe. I mean, where you draw the map, that's a whole other issue. But to say again, the Rishalmi wants to say that no, this was given to them properly, so that then will impact the entire narrative if you would follow that that Yerushalmi. So in terms of the pshat, the big distinction that we saw, as I said in pshat, is that Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad are opportunists. They already have this land. Why go to waste? Let's take it. According to the Ramban, it sounds like Bnei Menashe are sucked into this, or at least some of them are sucked into this. We then learn along the way here that Bnei Menashe may very well be a misnomer, that it's mainly Menashe, or people that are connected to Menashe. A Menashe coalition may be a better way of describing it, because we end up finding that other families were there as well, notably people who were Menashe on their mother's side, and that's where we find the mother's name over here, or the mother's side being considered. Notably, the family of Yair, the family of Yehuda, are included over here as well. The Pshat and the Chumash sounds like, again, Reuven and Gad are opportunists, but Menashe then are adventurers, as it were. Oh, let's go and capture some more land. They go and capture the whole Golan, and they take the Golan, and then Moshe says, okay, you took it. It's yours, and you can go live there. On the other hand, despite the fact that they were ready to fight and ready to take and so on, and they took the Golan, the other members, or most of the members of Menashe, not even Chelek, not even half and half, most of the members of Menashe decide, including the daughters of Tzlavchad, they decide that they'd much rather be in the land of Israel. By the way, I'll say it again now, because I said it quickly before, in the very place that Yosef was taken from, they want that land, area of Shechem, and the whole larger area over there, and that becomes their land, because there is some kind of, not just poetic justice to this, but there's some kind of moral justice as well for them to go back and take the land that Yosef was ripped up from.